is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Danny Young, the head boys coach at Shaker Heights High School, and you're listening to Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable, it's all cloud-based, and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Lindzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. We are jumping on after watching the Cavaliers blow a double-digit lead to the New Orleans Pelicans and looking like maybe Ricky Rubio going down with an injury, which if that is the case for anyone who is closely watching the Cavaliers, Darius Garland is currently in COVID protocols. And if Ricky Rubio goes down, there is absolutely zero playmaking left for the Cleveland Cavaliers and things could take a turn for the worse very quickly for the Cavs. Hopefully, let's just cross our fingers that Rubio maybe just has a sprained knee, but it didn't look good since it was a non-contact injury.
I mean, who knows where they're going to go from here if Rubio's seriously injured. So, yeah, the Cavs, you know, the likelihood that they're going to avoid COVID stuff and the rest of the NBA, for that matter, is not looking good. Let's start with the good news, though. J.B. Bickerstaff extended contract through rumored 2026-2027. For some reason, the Cavs don't release those details. I don't know if it's because they're paying so many coaches and they don't want to let people know that or what the whole deal is. But your thoughts on J.B. Bickerstaff extended contract?
Good move by the Cavs. I think what it does is it puts the organization's focus on the long term, and you're going to have this guy around for five more years, or maybe not five more years, but certainly it looks like he's going to be here through the building of this team. And it clearly seems like to this point, he has these guys' ear. He has the pulse of this team. And you can't argue with the results of what he's gotten done so far. So because he's a longtime league veteran, his dad was obviously in the league for a long time, it just feels like it's a good move. And JB Bickerstaff isn't one of these guys that has been over and over again given opportunities and proved himself to be a mediocre coach. I think he's a guy who could end up being an outstanding NBA coach. And hopefully that's going to be the case. And like I said, I like it just because it puts the focus on the long term, which is, I think, when you talk about building around the Garland, Mobley, Jared Allen, Okoro core, I think that you want to be focused on the long term. You don't want to make short term moves with the idea that, hey, we got to win tomorrow, even though this team is clearly ahead of schedule from where certainly you and I thought and where everybody else thought they were going to be. It's still important to remember that this is a really young team and we've got to be focused on, hey, what do we have to do to build around what we already have and not try to make any short-term moves? And I think signing Bickerstaff just makes it an organizational focus on how do we do that over the next 3, 4, 5 years, not how do we do it over the next 3, 4, 5 months.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, they've definitely made some huge leaps and bounds. I mean, we've talked about it at length. We don't need to, I think you have to start thinking if they really want to be a competitor, they're gonna need to get another guard in here. There's Ben Simmons rumors today, Mike, again. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see it today, but obviously I've seen a lot of it this week.
Yeah, there was some Ben Simmons rumors. He was on Shams was on Bull and Fox today talking about the likelihood of that trade happening.
Cavs-specific trade or just a trade of Simmons in general?
Cavs-specific trade. Shams was on. They got Shams on because for some reason, I don't exactly know why today it was a huge rumor situation going on that the Cavs had talked about swap trading for Ben Simmons. This is the Shams quote on the Bull and Fox here in Cleveland. I do think the Cavs have a level of interest in Ben Simmons, but right now with everything going on around the league, I don't think those sweepstakes are as fluid as they were 2 to 3 weeks ago. I think it's really been dormant for the last couple of weeks. I'm not sure the viability of a trade right now. You have to look at their asset pool. Colin Sexton's the guy I'm definitely going to keep my eye on. Could there be a package that the Cavs are able to get a ball handler like Ben Simmons or Caris LeVert? Remains to be seen. So,
I think I think it hinges on what do you think about, and I don't mean you, but I mean, what do the Cavs think about Isaac Okoro, right? Because Okoro is the guy who is of those big four that they've acquired in the last year and a half, 2 years. Okoro is the one guy who probably you would say, I think you rank them obviously Mobley, Garland, Allen, in whatever particular order you want to rank them. And Okoro is clearly the fourth guy in that mix. Now, can Okoro end up being a good player? And can he end up being somebody who can be an important part of a winning team? I think he can because of what he does defensively and how physical he is. And as we talked about last week, before he entered into the protocols, he had three straight games of over 20 points. Now, he didn't play very well tonight or do much. But would you be willing to give up Sexton and give up some kind of draft capital in order to get Ben Simmons?
Yep.
You'd have to look long and hard at that. I guess for me, it still comes back to what version of Ben Simmons am I getting? And is he damaged as a result of the yips so much that I can't maximize what Ben Simmons is or can be? And look, I don't think the guy's ever going to necessarily shoot jump shots. I don't think he's ever necessarily going to be the guy that you can give the ball to at the end of games. But if your four core guys are Garland, Mobley, Allen, and Simmons, I mean, that's a huge, huge team when you think Allen, Mobley, Simmons. And in Mobley and Simmons, you have two guys who can basically guard all five positions, maybe four out of the five. And Allen's proven himself to be pretty effective as a defender as well. And Garland's a guy who's a small guard. One of the concerns about him has always been, well, how well can he defend? If you surround him with those three guys and then whoever you want to put in that other spot, it alleviates any concerns you have about Garland on the defensive end of the floor. And then his offense has been so sensational that the way that that lineup is constructed, again, if I'm getting the best version of Ben Simmons, and I don't mean the best ideal version where suddenly Simmons is shooting jump shots and he's doing, I'm just saying the best version of what you saw from Ben Simmons in Philadelphia, if you put that guy on this team, I think suddenly now you have a team that legitimately can talk about not winning an NBA championship, but that team could beat anybody on a given night or in a given series in the next couple of years for sure, if you get the Simmons that isn't mentally affected by what's already gone on. And I would be hesitant to trade for him only because I'm not sure that that guy exists anymore. Because I think once it gets in your head, I think it's really difficult to get it out. And I don't think sitting here the way he's been over the last 6-8 months thinking about what happened against Atlanta, to me, that doesn't – you got to get back out on the court and play your way through it as opposed to just stewing at home where all you're doing is thinking about what's going on and what you have to do and what happened in the past. So I like the idea of theoretical Ben Simmons, the theoretical best version of him, but I'm not sure I would trade for Ben Simmons in the mental condition that he is now. And I don't know if he can,
Mike, his PR firm and agents are promoting him to be voted into the All-Star game.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. Really? Like what, why in the world, if you're clutch, why would you do that? All you're doing is setting him up to be ridiculed, right?
Well, the thing is, Mike, I mean, you can make the argument that they were doing that for all of the teams, all the players that are part of their brand or whatever.
You'd be a moron.
Well,
right? I mean, it's stupid. Why would you promote a guy who A, hasn't played, B, it just... To me, it makes no sense. It's completely idiotic. It's just bringing more attention to a guy who, if anything, he needs less attention, not more, as he tries to work his way back eventually from whatever mental issues are facing him. I mean, it's stupid. Why would you put the spotlight on the fact that the guy's not playing? Are you thinking that you're putting pressure on the Sixers by doing that?
Maybe that's the assumption. I don't know.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
A good assumption, but
no, it's a bad assumption. It's a very bad assumption.
So, anyways, all right. So that's enough.
Would you trade for Simmons?
I mean, if you could trade him for,
let's say you could get him for Sexton, Okoro, and one future protected, let's say top 10 or top 5, number one pick. Would you trade those three assets for Ben Simmons?
Hmm. I think if I could just trade Sexton and Okoro, then yes.
But you got to think that if you trade that pick and you have the young core that we have and you add Simmons to that core.
And LeBron's coming back.
That pick is not going to be that great of a pick. It's not going to be a top 10, top 5 pick. And if you protect it, if you lottery protect it, or if you top 10 protect it, top 5 protect it, whatever, where you're not giving up the idea that if something catastrophic happens to the Cavs, you're not giving up the opportunity to be at the top of the draft again. I think you'd have to think long and hard about it. And it's still, though, I'm nervous about the mental side of it.
Okay.
I think I'd do it, though. I honestly think I would. I think I'd do it because the potential upside of what you could be defensively with that team is just amazing. I mean, it is amazing. And you don't have in Garland, you'd have a perimeter guy that could get you buckets down the stretch of a game. I'd like to have a little bit bigger guy than Garland be able to get me buckets, but that would be the next piece that team would have to fill. They'd need a wing. You'd need a wing scorer to fill out and complete that team. If your core four was Garland, Simmons, Mobley, and Allen, if you could find one more guy who was a scorer/shooter that could play the whatever 2-3, whatever position you want, basically a wing, then you'd really have something.
It's true. Mike, it's really a sad day today. You know, the Rubio injured. You saw John Madden passed away?
I did see that.
Oh, man. It's so sad. It's a sad day. It's a gutting day, Mike.
He wasn't sick, though, right? They said it was kind of unexpected. Granted, he's 85.
Yeah, but, and they just did that. Did you – that doc that they put out? I don't know if you watched any of it.
I didn't watch any of it, but I saw
it. I watched like half an hour of it. It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
I'm sure it was good. John Madden's led an interesting life for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, sorry, we won't talk football till the end of the podcast. I apologize. All right. LeBron, here, Mike, I don't know if you saw this. LeBron crossed 36,000 points tonight. Youngest player to ever do that.
He's been really good.
Triple double tonight.
Beat the lowly Houston Rockets, but LeBron's been on a tear. I think he said, did he have over 30 tonight?
Hold on. I'll pull up the stats for tonight. I did not have that ready. I just saw the triple double.
I know he's had like 5 or 6 games in a row where he's been over over 30. So
LeBron 32, 11, and 11.
Okay, so LeBron's statistics over. I saw a tweet maybe yesterday that I think it was something about it was maybe about halfway through what the Lakers' schedule has been so far, so maybe 15 games in versus the last 15 games. The last 15 games or so, LeBron has been basically at his career averages. So it was like he's averaging 28,
as you would say, Mike, greatest player of all time.
Second greatest player of all time. I don't think you can dispute that anymore at this point. But he's been continued to be good. It's just the fact of the matter is, the rest of the Lakers roster is a mess. And I know people have been absolutely just everywhere you look, people are just annihilating Russell Westbrook. You would think that this guy is, I don't know, that he's a career criminal, the way that people just despise the way he plays. And I think so much of it now is what he does just doesn't fit whatsoever what they do and what you want to do with LeBron. And
he had a triple-double tonight too, Mike.
He's got to be – I bet he's averaging 28 and 8 probably somewhere in there.
Who?
Westbrook.
Oh, no. Westbrook's averaging 28 and 8. He's only averaging 20.
I
thought you said 28, 8 and 8.
No,
I was like,
no, 28 and 8.
He's averaging 19.8, 8 rebounds and 8.2 assists per game.
That's pretty good because I didn't look at it. So, look – statistically, the guy's going to always be able to put up numbers because
the Lakers are pitiful. They're starting Stanley Johnson right now. Okay,
they have nothing.
Tonight, by the way, Mike. LeBron was the center tonight.
That team's not going anywhere unless AD becomes one of the top five players
made
in the league. Since he comes back. I'm just saying that's the only that is their only potential path to being a contender. Now in the West, being a contender is maybe different than it's been in the past because you really have three teams at the top of the standings and then everybody else is just a mishmash from spot 4 down to spot really, I guess 9, maybe 10.
Yo, Mike, speaking of which, have you looked at the box score of the Denver Golden State game today yet, Mike?
Tonight? No, let me take a look.
It's a blowout. Steph Curry only had 2 points at halftime. It's 60-36 at half, Nuggets.
And Steph's playing.
Yes, he's got 2 points.
That's not good for the – how many does Jokic have here?
14-7-4-2.
Jokic has been on an absolute tear.
He's had the best statistical season throughout this far in the season ever. I don't know if I saw that like 2 days ago.
Yeah, he's rampaging through the league. And when you look at his roster right now, look at his starting lineup.
It's gone awful.
Barton's the only guy left from their original starting lineup.
You're
starting
dirty.
Austin
like
Rivers.
Him.
You don't like Campazzo?
He's dirty. I don't like him.
He'd look good on the Cavs right now.
That's true.
Would you rather have him or Pete Pangos?
Oh, Pangos. God, he's...
Kevin Pangos, by the way.
I was going to say, why do you say Pete?
Pete, there's a guy that used to play for Eastern Michigan back when I played at Kent. His name was Pete Pangos. So whenever I see Pangos, I always think of Pete Pangos. Shout out Pete Pangos.
He would get a mention on an NBA podcast.
Went to high school at Copley. So anyway, yeah. So whenever I think of Kevin Pangos, automatically in my mind, for whatever reason, Pete Pangos pops in there. So, but yeah, I would take Campazzo at this point if Rubio is going to be out and if Garland doesn't hurry back from the protocols, where Cavs are going to be in trouble, as we've talked about already. So, yeah.
Anyways, all right. As far as the rest of the league is concerned, you know, this whole COVID thing is really, really rampaging and causing like rosters. Like the rosters that the Toronto Raptors threw out there the other night against the Cavs when they scored 118 through three quarters.
That had to be the worst NBA roster ever, right?
Mike, did you know that of those eight players they had dressed that night, how many of the eight players were on 10-day contracts? Do you know the answer to this question?
I think like six.
It was six, Mike. Six. I really wish I had Nick Nurse's phone number. I probably could have gotten a 10-day contract. I was like, Nick, here, I can take a COVID test. Give me a COVID test.
Can I'll pass a COVID test. You can catch the ball. You're hired. No, had to be the worst. No offense to those guys, because obviously if you're making it to the NBA, whether you're on a 10-day contract or whatever, you're an incredible basketball player. But that had to be the worst roster that ever suited up for a regular season NBA game.
And we lived through the 2012 Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, it wasn't even close. I mean, that roster was just – it was a mess. It was legitimately
a
mess.
I want to pull up – I'm going to pull up, Mike, for our joint amusement. The roster or the players that played for the Toronto Raptors in this game. Watanabe. Utah Watanabe. Hey, he's averaging 9 points a game.
Nice.
Zvi Mihailuk.
Okay.
6.9 points. DJ Wilson.
DJ Wilson. He was the guy that I had heard of because he was with the Bucks.
Yeah, and I had heard of Chris
Boucher has been on the roster. He's been on the roster. Good player.
Yeah, yeah.
He's legit.
Every time I hear his name, I think of Bobby Boucher from Waterboy.
Yeah, there you go. Right. I understand. Yep.
And Delano Bantone. That guy literally looked like he was found on the East 9.
Okay.
For the game. Then we had Tremont Waters, who I've heard of that guy because he played for Milwaukee at one point, I feel like. Okay. We got.
You got more than me. I never heard of him.
Juwan Morgan.
Okay.
Never heard of that guy. And Daniel Oturu. I believe he played for the Bulls at one point.
Well, let's just put it this way. As I said, that's got to be the worst roster that's ever played collectively in a regular season NBA game. It's hard to believe that anybody has ever fielded a worse roster than that.
Yeah, and that's a team that's 14-16. The Detroit Pistons are blazing right now. They're 5-27, Mike. 5-27.
The Pistons and the Magic are in a class by themselves at this point.
Oh.
And somehow, I don't know how Houston has – I don't know how they ran off that 7 or 8 game winning streak, in all honesty. But I guess you'd probably put them as the third team that you kind of chalk those games up as – automatic wins, and then you have the next tier of teams that I think in the West you would include, although we lost to the Pelicans tonight. At this point, you got to say the Pelicans, Thunder, Kings are probably in that next range in the West, and then in the East, probably, I don't know, I think Indiana and Toronto are probably better than that, but...
I mean, not right now. Toronto's not.
No, not right now. Not right now. Toronto is definitely not right now.
Yeah,
and so. Indiana just seems like that seems like a mess in terms of every single guy they have just about is in trade rumors, and it doesn't seem like they've taken well to Rick Carlisle, or he hasn't taken well to them, whatever the case may be. That team just seems like a team that is unhappy. It seems like the players aren't happy, the front office is unhappy, the coaching staff is unhappy. Doesn't seem like a place that would be fun to be playing basketball right now. I think that whatever they're going to do, hopefully they do something major and get a shakeup so they can figure out what direction they want to go with that team. And maybe one or two of their guys will end up on a better team in a better situation. I do not want Caris LeVert, by the way. I hope the Cavs.
Okay, well, here we go. Kendrick Perkins just tweeted this, Mike. Here you go.
All right.
If Rubio injury is serious, what player do the Cavs need to trade for? A, Caris LeVert. You're out. B, Ben Simmons. C, a name we didn't even say. CJ McCollum or D other question mark of those four players, who would you want?
Well, there's only three players, right?
Or of those three players, who would you want? You already said no to LeVert. Do you want Simmons?
I want Simmons. I mean,
is Simmons more higher asking price than McCollum?
Yes, because of age
And I think that's probably it. Because I still think various teams probably have various opinions on him. But I think everybody, to some degree, you have to look at him as damaged goods that you're going to have to reclimate. You're going to have to figure out how to get him back to where he was when he was at his best with the Sixers. I think that's what you're hoping for if you trade for Simmons. CJ McCollum, especially for the Cavs, like, what sense does that make? Like, I guess in the short term, it makes you better. And maybe you could say, okay, this team has been off to such a good start, and you and I have traded lots of texts basically saying at some point, this team is real. It's no longer a mirage, because basically every metric that you can find shows the Cavs as one of the top 5, 6, 7 teams in the league. You can look at any statistic you want to pull up, and it's all pointing to the fact that the Cavs are for real and are right there with all the other best teams in the league. Now, you could say that maybe it's not going to hold. Maybe they're only an injury or two away, and maybe this stretch, if Rubio is really out and Garland's in protocols for 4 or 5 games, they might lose 4 or 5 in a row without those guys. Yeah. And then maybe you start thinking differently about the season. But to me, getting CJ McCollum, maybe it helps you this year, but I wouldn't be willing to give up very much for McCollum.
Okay.
Like very, very, very little would I give up for CJ McCollum. Cause I just think by the time this core is ready, you're going to have a 32, 33 year old CJ McCollum. To me, that doesn't make sense to give up anything of any real value. Whereas with Simmons, at least you give up stuff that has value for Simmons. And when Darius Garland's 24, Simmons is 29. That to me makes a lot more sense. Yep. Plus you have Simmons locked up on a long-term contract, which could end up being an albatross if you can't figure out how to get him back to where he needs to be. But you have at least a better chance. And I think Simmons, because of what he brings on the defensive end of the floor, McCollum doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't really like Caris LeVert's game. I don't think he's been hurt so often. And there's a reason why teams don't want him, whether that's injury, whether that's something about his personality, whether that's something about him on the floor. I don't know. I would not want Caris LeVert. Again, I wouldn't give up anything big for him. Let's put it that way. If I could get him for a second round pick, great. But if I have to give up any real asset to get Caris LeVert, no thank you.
All right, I'm going to fawn over LeBron again. Here you go. You ready?
Okay, sure.
NBA stat clubs that LeBron James is a sole member of.
Okay.
27,000, 7,000, 7,000. 28,000, 8,000, 8,000. 29,000, 9,000, 9,000. And all the way, 30,000, 9,000, 9,000, 31,000, 32,000, 33,000, 34,000, 35,000, 36,000, 9,000, 9,000. It's pretty...
Look, there's no doubt. I mean, come on. When you look at guys, the things that he does at his size as a scorer, as a rebounder, as a passer, yeah, I mean, he's going to... The longer he plays, the more he's going to put those career records out of reach, and those career milestones out of reach. And if you're judging a career and you're judging greatness by how great you are for the longest period of time, then I think you probably even eliminate Michael from that discussion, and you're basically down to Kareem, Karl Malone, and LeBron. Those are the three guys that played at a very, 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 very high level for the longest period of time. And I think it's really honestly not even close when you look at what LeBron's doing at his age in terms of carrying a team and averaging 26 a game and 7 rebounds and 6 assists or whatever he's averaging this year compared to what Kareem and Karl Malone were doing at age 36. They were both still effective, but they were nowhere near equaling what they had done earlier in their career. So if you're just talking longevity and greatness, then LeBron is unassailable in that area. I just don't think you can compare. For me, as I've always said, I just don't think that that's, if I'm talking about the greatest player of all time, yeah, you can't have a guy have 1 or 2 great seasons and say that guy's the greatest of all time. But it's not like Michael had a 5-season career. I mean, the guy was averaging 20-something a game at age 40 for the Wizards. So it's still for me, Jordan, and you'll never convince me otherwise. I don't mean you personally, but no one will ever be able to convince me personally that LeBron is a better basketball player than Michael Jordan. I was there and watched Jordan, and it's just not comparable. Michael Jordan's peaks were, they just were higher than LeBron's. I'm sorry.
Yep. Okay.
But that doesn't denigrate what LeBron has done. What LeBron has done over the course of his career is phenomenal. I was actually having this discussion with my father-in-law and my mother-in-law for that matter at Christmas, just talking about how there's a guy who, when you think about LeBron coming on the stage when he was 14, 15 years old and being on the cover of Sports Illustrated and every person out there saying, this guy's the next guy, he's going to be the next great NBA player. And for him not only to become the next great NBA player, but the second best player of all time, and in some people's eyes, the best player of all time, and to do that under the kind of pressure and scrutiny that he did it under, is just, it's incredible. It's borderline unbelievable and unfathomable that he was able to live up to the hype, and not only live up to the hype on the floor, but I think the one thing that you can say about LeBron is the missteps, the worst thing anybody can say about him off the floor is that he signed on for the decision. And probably the only reason why we really think that's a bad stain on his career is because we were the one team that got hurt by the decision. The Cavs are the one team that we felt like we took it personally that he left. And look, that's the worst thing the guy's done in a 16 or 17 year career to this point. And he's more than lived up to the hype. I know that sometimes I'm critical of LeBron, but my gosh, what the guy has done, he's absolutely unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I should have sent it to you. I saw somebody had tweeted out a highlight tape of LeBron or a highlight video of LeBron in high school. And it said, and keep in mind, all these highlights were from the first half of one game. And it was ridiculous. He had 3, 4, 5 just spectacular, unbelievable dunks, all these no-look passes, rebounds. It was incredible. And it was from one half of one high school game. And of course, LeBron looks like if I was playing against kindergarten kids. I mean, that's really what it looked like, him as a high school player. And look, we probably can't praise LeBron enough for what he's done comparatively to the pressure that he was under and the scrutiny that he faced and to do all the things that he's done. And has he been perfect? No. And we've categorized some of the things that he's done, but man, he's been unbelievable.
Yep. Sorry, I just wanted to throw that in there. I didn't mean for it to go into a tangent, but...
Sorry, but no, that was good because I think sometimes people think that I don't appreciate LeBron's game because I'm always plugging Michael Jordan, but LeBron is phenomenal. He is phenomenal.
Yep. All right, Mike. I don't know if there's anything else we really want to talk about. As far as, you know, NBA stories, you know, right now it's hard to follow NBA stories because there's so many COVID things. Like I scroll through Woj's timeline and it's either this guy got signed to a hardship exemption or this team is not able to,
I think the hard part is you don't know, like when you look at a score, if you're just looking at a score, you have no idea what that score means. Is it real or is it not real? Like I'll give you an example. So tonight, the Knicks beat Minnesota. Do you have any idea who played for either of those teams?
Well, I know Anthony Edwards cleared protocols today, but I'm going to guess he didn't play tonight. And I'm guessing Torian Prince also cleared protocols, but I'm guessing they both didn't play tonight. That's all I know.
So the Knicks had basically everybody available for their team. The Timberwolves had no Anthony Edwards, no Karl Anthony Towns, no D'Angelo Russell. So how do you evaluate? I mean, obviously it's a good win for the Knicks. You got to win games just the same way the Cavs beat up on the Raptors G League roster the other night, and same way it was a missed opportunity tonight to beat the Pelicans without Brandon Ingram. But so you got to win the games that are in front of you. But what does that game ultimately mean about either one of those teams? I think the answer to that is really nothing. And there's so many games that are like that, that you just look at the score and you have no idea what it means until you go in and look at the box score and figure out who is actually playing in the game. And as you've said a bunch of times, the protocols change, the guys that are in and out and who's playing and who's not playing, it's impossible to even keep track of it. And it almost feels, again, like these games are, I don't want to say meaningless, but as far as figuring out what's the impact on the long-term viability of any of these teams as playoff teams, play-in teams, contenders, who knows?
Did Obi Toppin go behind or between the legs in that game?
I don't know if he did today, but the fact that he's done that at least twice this season in game is pretty crazy. Now, granted, they're both breakaways, but as you attempted to do today on an 8-foot rim, that is an impossible move. So good luck.
Thanks, Mike.
Good luck with that. Hey, I didn't even try because there would be no way that I could even.
You would have torn your other ACL.
I couldn't do it on a 6-foot rim, I don't think so.
Yeah. All right,
Kyrie, man, Kyrie is what's going to happen?
He'll play
with Kyrie
on January 5th. You know what? His their next away game is January 5th. They play January 5th, and then they play January 11th. You know what their first? And then there's an extended road trip. Guess where his first extended road trip game is?
Cleveland.
Cleveland, Ohio. Will he play? He has yet to play in Cleveland since he left.
We'll see.
It would be his third game of the season, or will he be?
The reaction? What's the reaction to Kyrie?
Oh, I don't even. I think people are over it at this point, right?
Yeah, I don't think he gets a negative reception. Come on, the shot that he hit. Anybody who's holding that against him that would boo the guy in person. I just don't think.
It would be like booing LeBron now. Like LeBron leaving the first time we booed him. Okay. He came back, brought us a championship. If you go and you boo LeBron,
yeah, you got problems.
And any people listen, and I have friends who despise LeBron, and I say, you guys realize, in your lifetime, we have one championship. You're gonna sit here and complain and not like him because. Whatever. It's just ridiculous. It's obnoxious. People are obnoxious, Mike. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, there's no reason to boo the guy.
No reason.
Is he coming back? Put the odds right now, man. Put the odds.
But is he coming back like at the end of this season? Or
yeah, put the odds. At any point where he's still a meaningful player.
I think he'll be back again. I think he'll end his career here.
When he's still a meaningful player.
I don't know about meaningful, but I think he'll be back again.
So you think he's going to sign one more contract with the Lakers?
Well, he's already signed a contract before the season. So he's got doesn't he have like 3 more years, Mike?
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure he signed a contract extension. Hold on.
I don't think so.
He signed a 2-year contract extension. 2020, he's signed through next season.
All right, so one more year, and then back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
So now your starting lineup is Garland, Simmons, LeBron, Mobley, Jared Allen. Give us the title now.
That would be a pretty good starting lineup, Mike.
depending on what version of LeBron you get.
Let's end this now, Mike, with very brief Browns talk.
We're getting to the Browns already?
What do you mean already?
You don't have anything else to say? Nothing? Nothing about any of these other teams?
Is there something you want to say? I don't know. I don't have anything else to say. COVID. That's what we talked about.
That's the whole entire analysis.
I mean, the thing is this, Mike. Like, it would be unfair for me to say anything about any of these teams right now. I really think that, like, because there's so many teams that, like, I'll tell you, the one team that Utah hasn't seemingly hasn't been affected with COVID, I think it's because Rudy Gobert spread it all over the the place in 2020. That
they're the Jazz. Their the Jazz have herd immunity for the herd Jazz immunity
because Rudy Gobert, you know, spread it all over the place. But what I will say is this, Mike, like that's the only team that I feel like hasn't been really hit with that bug very much. And I mean, maybe I just screwed them.
Well, those three teams at the top of the West, right, have all sort of.
Golden State's starting to get hit. Wiggins has it. He's out.
But not hugely. Not hugely. Their best players haven't had it yet.
Wiggins isn't the top five players in that team.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But he's
probably a top four player until Klay comes back.
They just haven't had multiple guys at the same time. I think that's the difference is if you have one or two guys that go in, it's survivable. When you have 9 or 10 guys on your roster all go in at the same time, you might as well forget about it at that point.
Yeah. You're right. So is there another team you want to talk about, Mike? Is there another
team? Let me ask you this question.
Go ahead.
Let's do it this way. To this point, give me one team in the East and one team in the West that have been your biggest disappointments. That we haven't talked about. One team in the East and one team in the West that's been your biggest disappointment.
The answer to the East has got to be Atlanta, right?
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, it's not even close. It's got to be Atlanta.
Most everybody had them at worst in the top six, at worst. And a lot of people had them higher than that.
Yeah, I think us included. I think both of us had them in the top four or five, I feel.
I would agree.
It's pretty bad. It's not good. And so they have to be the most disappointing team in the East so far. As far as the West is concerned, I mean, it's probably the Lakers. I'm going to say for me, it's the Lakers. I picked them to win the West. So,
yeah, by definition, I guess they're the biggest disappointment.
Yeah. So, I don't know how you feel about it, but
I guess you'd have to say the Lakers, but we've talked a lot about them. So I would say maybe Dallas would be my pick.
Yeah, but they've been so injured. Like, they've been injured and COVID. So,
I think wanting more from Luka, I think, is the thing, right?
Well, Luka came in out of shape. He was too busy, you know, doing what he does in the offseason, and he didn't come in shape. That's the bottom line. He did not come in shape at all.
Did you read the Kevin O'Connor article? I think it was yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, it was Monday. Yeah, it was Monday.
Just talking a little bit about Luka and coming in and the fact that at some point, that basically he hasn't gotten better in terms of developing. When you think about these superstar guys and they go away for an offseason, they come back and they add something to their game every year. Basically, his point was that Luka comes back out of shape and really hasn't gotten better at anything. Now, granted, he's very, very good at a lot of things, but O'Connor's point was just the fact that he still is an inconsistent three-point shooter. He's not in the best of condition. It seems like for a guy like him who's not an uber athlete, one of your advantages, and I'll speak from personal experience, being someone who played against lots of players who were better quote unquote athletes than me, meaning running and jumping.
You were so athletic, Mike. You could dunk on a 6-foot hoop. We just discussed that.
I probably could dunk on a 6-foot hoop back in the day. Anyway, my point being that if you do not have the speed / quickness / leaping ability, the one thing that I did have was the ability to be in great condition so that I could. Maybe though I couldn't run as fast in the first quarter, maybe by the fourth quarter when other guys got tired or other guys weren't willing to keep running, the fact that I was willing to do that I always felt like was an advantage. And so if you're Luka and you're playing against guys who are better than you athletically, and again, I'm talking about athletics strictly meaning running, jumping, speed, quickness, fast twitch, all that kind of stuff. Because there's a lot of different ways that you can be athletic. You can tell me that Steph Curry is not one of the most athletic guys in the league, and I'd probably tell you you're wrong when you factor in eye-hand coordination and just the ability to move and agility, all those kinds of things. But to me, if you're Luka, like you have to be, if you want to maximize what you can be, you have to be in the best possible condition so that you can take advantage of what athleticism you do have. And if you're not in top condition, it just makes it all the more difficult. Now, again, we're talking about a guy who's 23 years old, who's been arguably one of the top five or six players in the league for the last two or three years. So I know we're nitpicking, but when you talk about a guy that's as talented as him, you just want to see him maximized. And I think that was Kevin O'Connor's point, is that to this point, it doesn't feel like he's maximized maybe what he has. And you can also make the argument, which he did, that Dallas hasn't really done very well as far as team building around him. And part of that, of course, has been Porzingis' injuries. When Porzingis has been healthy in Dallas, he's been pretty productive, and he's actually a pretty good fit next to Luka. The problem is, can you ever count on him to be healthy for long stretches of regular seasons? And certainly, he hasn't proven to be able to be healthy for any length of time in the play, in the short playoff runs that Dallas has had. So I think, to me, I think Dallas, if you lead with the Lakers as the biggest disappointment in the West, I think Dallas is probably a close second as far as being disappointing.
Yeah. Mark Cuban's probably wanting to rip his hair out, and he's going to soon start yelling at the officials and blaming other people and just going crazy. I don't know. I mean, Jason Kidd, is he the right guy? If I was on the team and he was my coach, would I be motivated by Jason Kidd?
I don't know. It's hard to know. It's hard to know, right? His track record would tell you that he has not been a very good coach in his two previous stops. But do guys improve? Do guys get better? Jason Kidd is, as a player, probably considered to be one of the most cerebral, smartest players that has ever played in the league. So is he able to translate that into coaching? To this point, he hasn't been, at least as far as being a top-tier NBA coach. I don't know. I don't know enough. I haven't watched enough Mavericks basketball this year compared to last year to know exactly how what he's doing is different than the approach that Carlisle took. But his track record to this point suggests that he's not a great coach. But who knows? Who knows? You got to have great talent in order to be a great coach. I think that speaks at any level. There's coaching. Coaching can make a difference, certainly. It definitely has an impact. But your team's ceiling, especially in the NBA, is determined by how much talent you have on that roster. And then it's the coach's job to maximize that. So whether Kidd is maximizing the talent on that roster, I don't really know. Like you said, they've had a lot of injuries and a lot of COVID go through there, especially last year. So who knows? Who knows about Jason Kidd at this point?
Yeah.
All right, last question. This one we're not going to take any time because one of them is obvious. So now we said the biggest disappointments. Who are the biggest positive surprises in these conferences? The Eastern Conference is done. Cavs. And in the West, I think it's a pretty obvious answer.
It's got to be the Nuggets, right?
No. Look at the standings, man.
They're 500 with a friggin' roster that's terrible except for Jokic.
All right. I would say it's got to be the Grizzlies, right?
Well, the Grizzlies, but the Grizzlies haven't been performing at a high level all season. They've just recently been playing really well, and the West is so bad they jumped up to four. I could buy that.
But Memphis won. They won like 9 out of 10 when Morant was out.
That's what I'm saying.
You said that to somebody. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, in their last 10, they're 7-3, and I was just saying Denver because that roster's pitiful.
It's a testament to how good Jokic is that Denver's sitting at 16-16. The reality for Denver is that if they can tread water and the West stays this bad and they can somehow stay as a top six seed, and come February they get Jamal Murray back and he's functional and they get Aaron Gordon back, that team still – now, look, I don't know if they're good enough to beat Utah, Phoenix, or the Warriors, but – I would not be all that excited if I was one of those teams to get Denver in the first or second round if I'm one of those top three teams. If Jamal Murray is back at whatever, 85% of Jamal Murray. Because Jokic has just been, he's just been destroying guys. I mean, he is just destroying guys from all over the floor. Threes, taking it to the basket with his passing. I know defensively, lots of people out there that are watching a lot more Nuggets basketball than I am have talked about how much improved he is on defense. So, yeah, I think Denver is clearly a surprise, but I think Memphis, nobody saw Memphis as a top four seed. They're almost in the same position that the Cavs are in. They're 3.5 games ahead of the Clippers, who are in the fifth spot, and they're sitting at number four. Now, they're clearly not in the tier of those top three teams in the West, but Memphis has been really good, surprisingly, and especially to do it for a long stretch without, obviously, their best player, Ja Morant.
Yep. And the other thing, too, like, the other team I would say you could maybe even make an argument for was Minnesota, because I certainly didn't have them competing at the level that they've competed, right? They've been a bit of a surprise as well.
Yeah, they've been a bit of a surprise to the positive, I would agree. San Antonio is at number 10. They've been a bit of a positive surprise. They've played well recently. DeJounte Murray has been averaging close to a triple-double and is playing really well. His jumper's starting to come around a little bit. San Antonio is definitely better than what people expected. And then we have our Sacramento Kings that have just continued to plummet. They might as well just – that's a franchise that – look, no offense to Sacramento, but man, it's almost like they're a player that needs to change the scenery. Just start over. Move them out of town. Move them to Seattle and then give Sacramento an expansion team. Let's just start over. Just let them start. Just get a whole new organization and let's start over.
Yep, I agree.
I'm ready to talk Browns.
Listen, I've been a big Baker stan. It's time. It's time for me to jump off the cliff, Mike.
I'm glad you're joining me, man. We can make it a tandem. Listen, we can make it a tandem.
And I have a Baker jersey, and I'll continue to wear it until he's not on the team. But, I mean, here's the thing. The first pick was terrible. I didn't see it live because I was eating dinner on Christmas Day. The second pick, all he needed to do was lead Landry, and it was a touchdown. But he underthrew it, and Landry fell down. So I don't know, you know, that the third pick, terrible. The fourth pick, I'm not even mad about the fourth pick because Peoples-Jones literally was getting tackled.
Yeah, like, that was terrible. That was a terrible call. Not Baker's fault.
No, that one's not
Stefanski's fault.
Well, we got to cross the 50. I understand that we've got a minute left. We had all our timeouts. Run the ball. Come on, run the ball.
Well, let's put it this way. Run the ball if you're the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield is your quarterback, right?
Yeah.
You don't run the ball. Most teams don't run the ball in that situation if you have a quarterback that you have confidence in. And I think that's what it comes down to. When you watch teams that are good, and the Browns for years and years and years, this predates Baker Mayfield, but it continues with Baker. When you see a team that has Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, and I know I'm talking about in those guys, you're talking about all-time great players. You're not just talking about guys who are good today. You're talking about these are all-time historic quarterbacks. But when you talk about the best quarterbacks in the league and they get the ball with a minute to go on their own 25, they're not thinking, let's run a couple draw plays and just take it into halftime, right? They're trying to score every single time. And the Browns never do that. They never do that. Like right now, and I don't know if it's Baker's injury, I don't know what it is, but any pass that is thrown over 15 yards, that pass could hit the guy on the numbers or it could sail 25 feet over the guy's head. And you have no idea when he drops back to pass. And to me, that's a very, very scary thought. And I don't know why it didn't scare Stefanski on Sunday into just running the ball, especially as much success as we've had running it. Now, look, is running it in that case necessarily the best option? Would I be excited that, hey, all right, we're running the ball? Not necessarily, but in that situation with that quarterback, with what he had done in the game to that point and what he's demonstrated over the course of the season he's capable of doing, I don't know why you don't at least run once out of that set of three series. Give it to him on first down, see if you can pick up 5 yards. Now you're second and five. It was stupefying. The last two losses are so frustrating.
We would be in control of the AFC North.
Well, we're still in control of the AFC North.
Well, no, we have to have things that have to happen.
Yeah, things that have to happen are pretty likely to happen, I would say.
The Bengals losing to the Chiefs is probably likely to happen because they
I would say that. Yeah, that's
and
that's
Ravens
happen.
Losing to the Rams is is probably going to happen too. I mean, but the Rams have been a disaster at times this season. So who knows?
Yeah, they've been up and down. They've been up and down. But I think the Rams will take care of business.
If the Ravens win against the Rams, there's no way in heck. I mean, that they're going to lose their last game because they play the Steelers. And the Steelers are terrible. I mean,
hey, the Steelers beat us, so
yeah. Well, they're terrible.
Let's put it this way. Of all the things that have to happen, the least likely thing to happen is that the Browns beat the Steelers and the Bengals. That's the least likely thing to happen. The other things that have to happen, I think, are way more likely.
I think the Browns are going to beat the Steelers. I'm not worried about that game.
All right. Well, you're far more confident in this team than I am. You have... you like to wear your Browns rose-colored glasses because you might see the glass half full, man. That thing is, even if it's half empty, man, it's down to its last drop in my book.
What's more likely, Mike? The Browns beating the Steelers or you being in remote learning the first week back winter break?
I have no idea. I don't know what the odds are in either of those, but I would say both of them, unfortunately, probably are not likely, but we'll see.
Oh, man, you are so negative.
You know, it is what it is. I just don't think, look, the Browns, I have too many years of history of bad things happening to the Browns. And these last 2 weeks to lose two games, one on a last second field goal after you had already missed a field goal at the same distance earlier in the game. And then to lose on that interception / pass interference where how... nine officials on the field don't see the guy grabbing a jersey. And then you see some of the pass interferences that are called. It's infuriating to watch. And I know officiating's hard, and I don't necessarily even blame the officials, but somebody's got to see that. That being said, you should never have been in that position. If your quarterback doesn't throw three interceptions earlier in the game, your defense that's basically decimated by COVID and injury hung in there against Aaron Rodgers, arguably one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the history of the game, who's been playing really, really well this season and may win the MVP. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to leave that loss on the field. I guess the only thing you can say, like I said earlier, is that we do, for the most part, I think, control our own destiny. So we'll see what happens. Yep. I'm not counting on anything, but we'll see.
By the way, one more thing. Sure. Going back to LeBron. Real quick. He's averaging the most minutes since 2016-2017 right now.
Father Time. Maybe looking at his first loss.
Yeah. So, oh well.
Or at least a tie. Maybe Father Time's got to settle for a tie with LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could be it.
All right, Mike.
Let's wrap it up there. Good episode. That was a lot of fun. Please make sure you check out our other episodes this week. Earlier on Monday, we had Dylan Mahalke, the men's basketball graduate assistant from Oklahoma, had a lot of great tips for young coaches out there who are interested in breaking into college coaching. So make sure you check that episode out. And coming up on Friday, we have the very first guest from the Hoopheads podcast, our very first interview guest, Alan Stein, jumps back on. He has a new book coming out called The Sideline that is written for youth sports parents, not just specifically basketball, but just youth sports. So if you are a parent out there and you are involved in the world of youth sports, this book is a great guide for how to navigate the youth sports world and make it a positive experience for you and your child. So it was a lot of fun to catch up with Alan. So that episode will be coming out on New Year's Eve. So make sure you check it out. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.